code improvement project. Mr. Hare.
Great. So, thank you. Commissioner Rucker, it's good to see you back again.
Thank you.
I have the pleasure of introducing Jay Sernick with the Bureau of Planning Sustainability on what truly is different this time around, which is a joint venture between the Bureau of Development Services and the Bureau of Planning Sustainability relative to crafting new code language to create, or rather, take a bite at a more streamlined approach to our historic review process, meaning the land use review process, meaning exemptions to the historic review, or even faster timelines. And I'm just going to intro it briefly and let Jay take the stage and acknowledge that we've been scratching our heads on this pretty much since October 2010, which is when the Irvington Historic District, as we all know, the largest historic district in the state of Oregon, started applying for building permits. And what we experienced very quickly was a persistent and large volume of tests on our code language, particularly in the area of minor alterations. And when I say consistently and quickly, as it's been about 20 months now, we found ourselves looking at a lot of the small changes matter the most, particularly in this residential district, and how we can apply that wider was really important. So with a lot of effort and political push, Commissioner Salzman, Mayor Sam Adams, and both our respective directors of our bureaus, BDS Director Paul Scarlett and BDS Director Susan Anderson, carved out of the budget, without providing additional money, several staff's time to kind of put this before you. So I'm going to let Jay take it from here. I'm sure you'll have questions. I'm glad to kind of fill in the background. We are hesitant in this, as I mentioned, pretty intently since Irvington was created, but we saw a very large spike in activity when the Buckman Historic District is trying to get online, and we looked at our fees proportional to the amount of work being proposed, and we saw a disparity. So, and we talked about this a bit. This obviously was a part of your State of the City Preservation Report. So I'm very happy to finally been told I have time to dedicate towards doing this effort, and I think it's pretty exciting. So, Jay, thanks.
Thanks, Tim. So I'm Jay Zugnit, again, with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So in your packet should be this two-page draft project scope dated July 6, 2012. If you can't find it, I'm going to pass around another copy for you. And this will be very brief. I'm just going to go through this quickly. I'm going to assume that you've all read it and have lots of questions. But this is really early. So we're in the scoping phase. Yeah, I wouldn't, don't bother looking for it. Just grab it. We're very early in the scoping phase, so what we're trying to do is define what it is we're going to be doing, and also, very importantly, what we're not going to be doing. I think everyone might have a slightly different take on what the intent is, so that's what we really tried to clarify. What's the problem? What is the problem we're trying to solve? And that's the first paragraph. So really it focuses on homeowners and making it easier for homeowners who really want to do the right thing. So to do that, what we want to do is really reassess when historic design review is appropriate and desired. So we have a long list of tasks here. Well, not that long. Well, three things specifically. The first one's pretty simple. Go through and work on the definitions. Really clarify those definitions. Make sure they're consistent with the State Historic Preservation Office, the National Park Service. And we think that some of those clarifications in terms of what is really maintenance and repair will help in terms of BDS's workload and also people's expectations as to what's required of them to do that right thing. Number two is the redefining some of those triggers or exemptions. Really, we need to figure out what is the appropriate level of review. Are certain projects going through a higher level of review than required? Is there a simpler way we can do it? Shorten that time frame. Add a little certainty to the review process. And it's really focused on minor alterations and also this concept of visibility from the right-of-way. So we know that visibility is a component of how we currently do design review, but really trying to define that, and is there a different way to look at it? And I'll talk about that in a little bit. And then finally, the procedure type. Can we create that shorter procedure type? We're calling it type 1X potentially. That's just that has a shorter appeal period, and also looking at other ways to simplify it. So this is a really quick project. 8 months for a legislative project is lightning speed. It may seem really slow to other people, but it is actually quite fast. Considering the last project I was on took 3 years, so just to... the tasks, I'm just going to cover the first two. We are collecting data. Tim has reviewed the last 18 months of permit data to try to tell us, okay, well, what, you know, if we make these changes, will we actually solve a problem? And then the second is Liza Mickle has done a lot of great research. She started to call all these other jurisdictions and ask them a list of questions. How do they deal with these issues? How do they deal with visibility from the right-of-way or temporary ADA structures, things like that? So we're going to use all that information and hopefully inform our process. So before I get into sort of the overall schedule, just quickly, the issues we're not addressing as part of this project. As I mentioned, that's almost as important. So we are not addressing the fees. BDS revised the fees just recently. That is not within the purview of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, although what we do may feed into the next revision. So keep that in mind. We're not updating the inventory. We are not updating the design guidelines. Both of those would be massive projects, a lot of time, a lot of process, and it's not feasible. And then also the website. And this list may grow, actually, as we go through this process. So the time frame, just to give you a very quick sense, we've started with this problem identification, research, and background. We're doing our check-ins with Planning Sustainability Committee. We also met with the Development Review Advisory Committee. They have a subcommittee that's helping us. And then we hopefully will have this, what we're calling a white paper, basically issue identification paper, available by early September. And that will basically lay out, okay, what are the problems, what do we hope to solve, and then develop some concepts. So what are the different approaches that we could do, move towards to solving those problems? And then what's not on this chart is that in that time frame of September, October, we'd like to come back so that you have a chance to, you know, weigh in on, okay, are we going in the right direction? What are we missing, and what should we be pursuing? We'll go back and create a discussion draft. Once we have sort of some consensus on the concepts, we'll go back and draft the actual code, because the devil will definitely be in the details. And then come back here as an opportunity for public testimony, although you won't be making a recommendation. We definitely do want to present your thoughts to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, who will be making a formal recommendation to City Council. So that would be in December, ideally. Then we would go to the Planning and Sustainability Commission January, City Council February, potentially. So that's it. Turn it over to you guys.
Questions? We have two folks who would like to comment. James Heuer and Kathy Young. So I'm glad you guys are sitting at the same table. I was a little worried. You said you're working together, but you couldn't stand for their point.
Don't read into it. Jim's over there, though.
Yeah. I couldn't sit in the same row with those guys.
Yeah, I don't want to give you don't want to give the impression it's not off Kumbaya, right?
Right.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, for the record, my name is Jim Heuer. I live at 1903 Northeast Hancock Street. Today, I really am in here as a representative of the Irvington Community Association and the Historic Preservation Committee. We have two committees that are deeply involved in this whole review process, our land use and historic preservation. We sort of divided the pie a little bit. The land use folks focus on the actual cases that we have to comment upon, and historic preservation is more of an advocacy group. So but we have only one mailing email list because all the same people are on both committees. So, but we kind of keep the issues separate. We have two different chairs. Both of the chairs, by the way, are out of the state right now, so it fell to me as one of the only guy who could get away this afternoon to speak on this case. We are very gratified that this project has been undertaken. We're happy that this has been recognized and the concerns that many of the people in our district have raised are being considered. And quite frankly, it's been, we're so nowhere near through all of the storms about this, but just having this project at least has given us the ability to say, well, something is happening. That said, the other side of the coin is that we are still very concerned about the fee structure, and we will continue to lobby the city and the Bureau of Development Services to take a closer look at that. We feel that there is still a considerable more opportunity to adopt a totally revenue-neutral fee structure that tilts the curve somewhat to extract a somewhat higher fee from the larger projects. For example, we have one that is soon to be going through design review. It's in a preliminary discussions right now to build a 21-unit apartment building at 2007 Northeast Broadway. That's going to be an expensive project to build. The land itself costs $400,000. Add another million or something to build the building. And what fee will they pay? $3,000-$4,000 maybe. Quite unfair compared to somebody who's changing out six windows and is paying $1,500. So we're going to continue hammering on that issue. Second thing I'd like to just express some concerns about, and I know this is going to be discussed at considerable length across the conduct of this project, is the whole issue of the visibility from the street and the extent to which parts of the structure that are not visible from the street are subject to historic design review or the scope of historic design review. In all 50-some or 60-some cases that the ICA has reviewed so far, we have concurred with the city that we should allow more flexibility at the backs of the structure or in parts of the structure that are not visible. But to suspend historic design review altogether in that part of the building is a non-starter from our point of view. Now, we will have more to say on that subject. Now, in along that line, I should just tell you that up until now, we have filed no appeals on any of the decisions made by the city in historic design review from the beginning of the district until this afternoon at noon when we filed our first appeal. I won't go into the details of that because there's a formal process that will evolve through that, but one of the subjects that will come up is the issue of how much is visible and to what extent should visibility determine the level of decision-making on that structure. Our hope, in part, is to allow the commission to think about that and start the dialogue in a very concrete way on a specific case that should be hitting your desks here within the next few weeks. I'm not sure exactly when that will be scheduled on your docket, but needless to say, we will be having representatives from Irvington and other members of the Historic Neighborhood Coalition speaking on that case when it comes up. So that's all we have to say right now. Again, thank you very much for launching the project.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Happy.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Galbraith, the director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. Like the Irvington Community Association, we're very happy that this project has been undertaken. I think its start dates back to the March City Council meeting when Carrie and Brian delivered the State of Preservation address to the city, and we and other people giving public testimony talked about the issues around the costs, the permit costs for historic design review, especially for the small projects, and some of the inconsistencies of the process. We are one of the leaders of the Portland's Coalition for Historic Resources. We're focusing on these issues in historic districts in particular, and we're also the organization sponsor for the Buckman National Register Historic District nomination that I think you've all heard us talk about the issues in that neighborhood concerned about fee structure and process. I wanted to say just a couple of things about the code improvement project. And echoing one of the things that Jim Hoyer said, the issue around the exemption of improvements not visible from the right-of-way is likewise a non-starter for all of the members of the coalition. And we've been consistent about that from our initial meeting with Paul Scarlett, from our meeting with Susan Anderson and Joe Zender, and our meeting briefing that Nicholas and Jay were kind enough to come over and do for us. There's been a lot of discussion around this around this and other issues in the city of San Francisco. They've been in a year and a half process of refining their ordinance work, and they determined that there were so many unintended consequences likely to arise from this kind of exemption that they decided to table it. And the conclusion that they reached is that the implementing ordinance that establishes a historic district, that's where you should determine if the rear elevations are insignificant enough that you would do some lesser than review process than you would typically do for historic buildings. That's going to stay a concern of ours, and I don't think it's going to be resolved by de facto policy decisions that simply reach the conclusion because it's rear-facing elevation that it's not important. We're happy to see that the timeline has been reduced. We think that the coalition, if we're able to successfully recruit representatives from all of the city's historic and conservation districts, we can be a big part of that public review process and help further reduce the time frame. We are still concerned about the abeyance issues in the Irvington neighborhood and applications that are a lack of enforcement of property owners choosing or saying that they didn't know about the historic design review process. And those abeyances being made on the grounds that there's this revision of process in place. And you all had this discussion, and I think you concluded that until the rules and regulations are changed, the process is the process. Among the comments that we provided back to Nicholas and to Jay and to Liza is that we think that the whole process would be, that the scoping process would be helped if we were able to provide a list of all elements not subject to review. So it would be really clear when you're in the clear and don't have to deal with historic design review. So you'd have a more direct route to approval. We hope the notification process can be streamlined. And we think perhaps some goals for this this work should be established so everybody understands why the city is undertaking this process at the public's request. We know this isn't a direct route to reducing fees, but obviously if the process is streamlined and we have less staff time being spent on these things, it should lead to a direct route to reduced fees because, as has already been mentioned, the inconsistencies among fees for big projects versus little teeny projects where sometimes the fees can exceed the amount of work is really not fair to homeowners, and that's what I think this whole process started out as being concerned about. How do you make it really easy for homeowners and property owners to do the right thing and not penalize them through a tedious and really expensive review to simply tell them you've got a model application here, when on the other hand you have violators just being told that they're not going to get a building permit, but just go ahead and nobody's stopping work on them, and we're seeing a lot of steady damage and erosion being done to historic resources in Irvington. And we're convinced that if these obstacles aren't resolved in time for the Buckman National Register District, we're really unlikely to see another historic district in the city. And if that's what the political will is hoping for, and I don't think it is, then we'll get there pretty quickly. But I don't think that's what anybody wants. I think we all want to see a better preservation agenda and easier routes to districts.
Can I ask you a quick follow-up question? You mentioned San Francisco and the idea of things that aren't visible from the public right-of-way and it being the nomination. How would it be in the nomination? What would that look like?
That the district nomination would somehow conclude that this district was I think the way they explain it, because they don't really have conservation districts, historic districts that are sort of less significant than, which in Portland's case would be sort of the conclusions that were reached when the conservation districts were created. But that all historic districts, as they come forward and are established in the city of San Francisco, that you would clearly state in the adopting and implementing ordinances that these are the regulations that would follow, that it would exempt, for example, elevations that aren't visible from the street.
But that would help us with our current...
No, it wouldn't. And San Francisco decided that this was such a quagmire with so many potential unintended consequences that they tabled it, decided they weren't going there.
Thank you. Any other comments, Jay or Tim, from the commission?
Well, I just had a question, I guess, on, we're talking about timeline reductions potentially and redefining, I guess, the review process, whether it's a type one or not. Is there an opportunity to be able to create another type? I mean, okay, I thought that would require a bigger legislative type of a deal, so.
Well, it's ultimately, this is going to be legislative. I mean, what we're looking at is trying to find, in the world of minor alterations, we found, again, in part because of Irvington's busyness, there's a lot of reviews that are pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of rubber stamping them, they deserve real eyes on them, and we think we could create a fast track process of, for instance, 30 days as opposed to 80 days.
Right.
And so we're optimistic for that. I hesitate to get too much of the details because we need to flush that out. Once upon a time, we had that fast track process in form of a type one. You remember we had type ones, type twos,
yeah,
and type threes. You see all the type threes and the type twos on appeal. The type ones would be appealed straight to LUBA. So there's really no appeal period. Then we would reserve those for a standard set of simple minor alterations. And we're confident that could be successful, particularly because of the advocacy of the historic districts. And I'm not thinking of Irvington, I'm thinking of the Northwest District Association, where they're so in it, and we'll have a partner in that effort. So
the type one, it would be different than a type one is now, though, you're saying?
Yeah, without getting into the details, we're going to make 1X.
Okay, because I mean, from my position as an applicant on a lot of these type 1 and 2s from the architectural side, there's not a lot of difference to me on a type 1 or a 2. I know the 1's supposed to be simpler, but it's almost the same amount of time.
That's the problem with the type 1 right now. It got inflated, and effectively it has a different field body, but it takes just as long.
Right.
It's very annoying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we would welcome that.
Other comments?
I have one. Kathy Galbraith made an interesting statement, and I didn't ask her about it. It's a public perception of the process is the process on the issue of abeyance and fees. And we had a very heated discussion, as you may recall, about that. What's the status?
The Bureau of Development Services Director, Paul Scarlett, is treating the abeyance as projects that are on abeyance right now. I don't have the number off the top of my head. I want to say there's 8. I will slightly correct what I heard earlier, that they are not being enforced upon. They are still under enforcement. We're just not assessing fines. And the director has made a decision that while this process, which we are going to figure out the details and the scopes of which, will not move forward on those abeyance matters at this time. So, they're in abeyance, they're on hold, for lack of a better term, but I understand and I've heard all the concerns raised by the neighborhood.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I guess one improvement since the last time we had the discussion is now there seems to be a clear process with at least a stated time frame, which we had neither of those last time. But.
Yeah, and I'll have an opportunity. I am excited about this, and I'll have an opportunity to talk with the commissioner tomorrow and my director in the same room. I'm not in a position to change his mind necessarily, but I think as this process moves forward, we're going to have some pieces, or maybe we're even going to have everyone agreeing on a lot of things. We certainly have a fast timeline. So that could impact decisions in play.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.